Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verse 7 tonight. We're moving into a section of the conclusion of Ecclesiastes. We won't complete that this evening, but as you you know, as we look back at the first half of Ecclesiastes, he's shown that really that human effort is futile because it results in things that aren't permanent, and the prospect of enjoying the results are very insecure. And so that's really the first half has a real focus on, you know, when you do accomplish things that you may not see the fruit of them, somebody else might be there. There's not that permanency of it. Then pretty much the second half, it's, you know, the focus was that, you know, you cannot know for sure that your efforts are going to succeed because you do not know the future. You cannot be positive of what God's future holds, what His plans are. And so that's really where the second half of the book. And toward the end here, it returns to this theme of enjoying life. And we've seen this several times throughout where there's a real emphasis on enjoying life, but yet that enjoyment is not in that sense of just enjoy life, but there's with respect that there's accountability, that there's that it's supposed to be lived before God. So living responsibly before God is found at the beginning of this section, in the middle of it, and at the end of this section. So there's a focus on living responsibly before God. In the section we'll look at tonight, in verse 11, 7 through 12, 7, there are really three parts of it, and they're fairly closely related. In the first part, in verses 7 to 8, Solomon calls for this enjoyment of life, with view of the, in view of the darkness of death. So we should enjoy life because, you know, there's more than a prospect of death out there. And then, following that, in the next couple of verses, he urges that youth should enjoy life because it's fleeting. But once again, it comes back and says, but that needs to be tempered with responsible living because everyone, you know, is answerable to God. And then the last part in verse chapter 12, the seven verses, there's that underlying urgency of responsibility. Once again, it's really a focus on youth, but it's because old age is an increasing time of difficulty and gloom and decay. It's, you know, it's not, you know, painted pretty realistically. So there's this focus that youth should enjoy life, which is kind of an interesting thing. I guess maybe from Solomon's perspective, he's saying that, you know, with youth that we should encourage them to enjoy life, but yet he does it in such a way that he's also saying, but you got to live responsibly for God. So it's not just, you know, go do whatever you want to. But sometimes maybe there's such a focus in society on accomplishing something that somebody else thinks is important that maybe we don't focus enough on enjoying life sometimes with youth. Those can be taken to ways that aren't responsible. There was one time when in Brenham, the Christian school, there was this speaker we had come. I know he's an artist, and I cannot remember what he did, whether it was that he had a bunch of scripture memorized or if he acted out something. I don't remember what it was. But I do know with artists, you know, whether, like, if you invite somebody to sing at some banquet or if you have somebody perform, you normally don't want them talking afterwards. And it's very hard to keep those people from talking usually. But, you know, they may be great performers, but when they start talking, you know, sometimes what they have to say is not all that appropriate, or can't get them to stop. But this guy, he started talking, and there were some question and answers or something. Anyway, he encouraged the kids, you know, if they wanted to pursue something like this, to drop out of school. You know, and you got all these kids, you know, they're ready to drop out of school. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, so yeah. But so I don't know that that's the aspect of just enjoy life, you know, go do what you want to. That's not what we see here. But in this first section in verses 7 to 8, he's saying enjoy life because of the darkness of death is coming. So there's that sense to everyone that, you know, you ought to enjoy life. And we saw this once before, while you have it, because life is fleeting. Life goes by quickly. So in verses 7 to 8, it says, the light is pleasant, and it is good for the eyes to see the sun. Indeed, if a man should live many years, let him rejoice in all of them, and let him remember the days of darkness, for they shall be many. And so it's that contrast between light and dark, which in this context is, you know, figuratively for a life and death. So it's good to enjoy. And there's a contrast in verse 8 with the ending. It says, everything that is to come will be futility, but I think that would be better translated, as we've seen it elsewhere, in the sense of brevity, you know, this wisp of time, because it's that same word for air. But here it's not, I don't think, in the sense of that it's futile. It's just that it's really brief. It's fleeting, and it's translated that way elsewhere. If you remember back in chapter 9 in verse 7, it says, go then, eat your bread in happiness, and drink your wine with a cheerful heart, for God has already approved your works. Let's see. Where's that? Verse 9, enjoy life with the woman whom you love all the days of your fleeting life. So I think it's that same aspect here. It's not saying, you know, enjoy life because it's all futile. He's saying enjoy it because it's brief, and in this briefness is kind of contrasted with the many days of death. And you know, once again, that Ecclesiastes isn't looking at the eternal life perspective. It's looking at this horizontal life, and so he's saying enjoy life. We're in Ecclesiastes 11, verse 9. And in 9 and 10, he's saying, enjoy life in your youth. Remember that God will judge. So here, you know, the first couple of verses are very general to everyone. Enjoy life because there's this very certainty of death. But now, in the rest of this section, it focuses on youth, that youth should be encouraged to enjoy life. But there's this aspect of judgment. So he says in verse 9, rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of your young manhood. And follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. And so, you know, it'd be at that point that we might become uncomfortable if we were teaching a class with youth, or you're talking to your children about it, and say, well, no, I don't know that I really want you to follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. But for most of us, just in without a context, that's not a good thing to be saying to any of us without some kind of a context. But the context is given, or the further, if you want, parameters to put around it, it says, yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. And with Ecclesiastes, it's not likely we should understand this as there is a future judgment. Therefore, you know, live responsibly here on earth, because in eternity you're going to stand before God in judgment. But this is written on this horse that, you know, he sees that God intervenes, that God brings a judgment now. There would be consequences to your action now. So he's saying enjoy life, but realize there is a sovereign moral God, and act accordingly. Now, he's already gone through this at times and saying, you know, you can't just look around, because sometimes the wicked person seems to prosper where the righteous person has calamity. But even in those settings, he's come back and said, but yet it's better to live righteously. It's better to live wisely. So if you just look around, you can see in a temporal setting that somebody's done something wrong and they prospered. But he's saying, yet there, we need to realize, at least in the general sense, that there are consequences. And so enjoy life, pursue those desires, but yet realize that there's a judgment. In verse 12, he says, so remove grief and anger from your heart and put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. So there we see the translation again that this is, you know, a wisp of time. Remove grief and anger from your heart. Maybe it's looking at more of the emotional, psychological aspects of things. And then put away pain from your body. Maybe looking more in the physical aspect. But the reason he's saying not to be, you know, caught up in all those things is that this period of time is a period to be enjoyed, and it goes by. You know, I don't know that there's a real effective way to communicate this to people, because at, you know, at young, especially when you're talking about teenagers, but even young adults, there's this sense, even though you know it's not true, but there is this sense that life's a long time, and you're immune to all those things that's going to happen. So you see people with various problems when they get older, and well, that's not going to happen to me, or I'll, you know, you look at the one person that doesn't have problems. You know, you look at the one person that lives for until they're 95 and they're running marathons, and go, well, I'll be like that person, you know. But yet, you know, these are some things that would be, you know, good to hear that. You know, when you have opportunities to do things you enjoy within that context of being responsible, you might ought to think about doing them at this age, because you're not going to be able to sometimes. You know, one of the things, and we'll see this later on as it gets a little more specific, but, you know, and it does, there are different settings, but it's amazing how many people retire and die. And you know, and that retirement is so closely connected to when they die. There's this Bible camp outside of Brenham, and this family from Houston, they built a home right by the Bible camp so they could be involved in it. And the first month out there, he died. And, you know, there's this really, really, really nice home out there that's basically, you know, been vacant, I guess, all these years. I mean, I'm not sure where it's at now. Somebody's probably bought it. So, but it's, you know, it was a way too expensive home in a setting that the typical person wouldn't want to live. But you hear for that from time to time where people, now they weren't retiring to do nothing. They were, you know, he was retiring to do something. But sometimes you have people, that sense of retiring to do nothing, and that causes problems. But, but there is that sense of enjoyment he's encouraging here. And so, you know, you think back of, you know, how quickly those kids grow up. And yet, when they're growing up, I remember Mom Robin, you know, she'd go, hurry, grow, you know, because you get so tired of whatever that age is sometimes and the things with it. But yet, all of a sudden, they're growing, and you're like, where did it go? And so, you know, there are those things in that, and when we say youth, I mean, I don't think here he's really thinking of it as in that relative sense, but yet, even at our ages now, I mean, there's a relative sense to youth. I don't think that's where Solomon's focusing on, don't misunderstand me. But Robin's grandmother, remember, we went to see her once, and I think she was in her maybe mid-70s at the time, and she was talking about these old ladies at the senior citizens deal. And I was just, you know, and I was 30 at the time, and she was talking about these ladies that were, you know, 90. Well, you know, 75 or 90, it was all the same to me. You know, but there's a huge difference between being 75 and 95. And she saw that difference, and, you know, whatever it was, I don't remember what it. But, you know, so there is a relative sense. So even though I think where Solomon's focusing on now, we're all past that youth. But yet, in a relative sense, there's, there may be some aspects here to think about in that sense of enjoying life, which is what he's encouraging, but yet with the idea that there's accountability. Well, in the last section, as we move into chapter 12, he says, you know, it's really live responsibly in your youth, for old age and death are coming. You know, he underlines the thought of responsible living in one's youth by vividly depicting through a series of word pictures the increasing gloom and declining powers of old age, which culminate in death. You know, he's saying, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. In verse 1, it's this focus on living responsible before the miseries of old age come. He says, remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, when you will say, I have no delight in them. Well, now that's a pretty straightforward statement. I don't know that, you know, it needs to be that horrible, because I've met a lot of people in really physical condition that they were extremely limited, and they seemed to have a great joy about their life and felt very blessed. So I don't think this should be read so much from this is a picture of what old age or death is supposed to be, as much as he's making this contrast of the focus being you ought to enjoy life when you have these opportunities to have these freedoms to do those, not necessarily saying you're going to be miserable at this time, but he is focusing that here. You know, so remember your Creator in the days of your youth. But sometimes, you know, people take youth in those years when they feel good to enjoy life on the earth without a regard to God, with the idea that when I get older, then I'll pay attention to God. And he's saying here, you know, it's remember God in the days of your youth. Have that relationship with God in the days of your youth, but yet it's, you know, enjoying life. Makes you wonder if we had a little more focus on enjoying life in God as opposed to all the restrictions, that, you know, Christianity might be a little more appealing. Though the New Testament with Jesus, I mean, there's a very strong sense of a call to discipleship. So I don't, you know, you have to kind of balance it within that. But sometimes there's such a focus on, you know, commitment that there's no place for enjoyment sometimes. And I don't think that's what we see consistently in the Bible either. In the next verses, you know, it's kind of the same thing, but the focus really gets on the kind of the downfall of living responsibly before the onset of dying comes. In 2-5, he says, before the sun and light, the moon and the stars are darkened, and clouds return after the rain. In the day that the watchmen of the house tremble, and the mighty men stoop, the grinding ones stand idle, because they are few, and those who look through windows grow dim, and the doors on the street are shut, as the sound of the grinding mill is low, and one will arise at the sound of the bird, and all the daughters of songs will sing softly. Furthermore, men are afraid of a high place and of terrors on the road. The almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper drags himself along, and the capaberry is ineffective, for man goes to his eternal home while mourners go about in the street. Well, he's saying, I have no delight in them before the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are darkened, and clouds return after the rain. So there he's painting that broad picture of death. You know, enjoy these things before the darkness of the sky comes. And then in verses 3 and following, he gets fairly graphic in his description. He says, the day that the watchmen of the house tremble. Most think this is probably looking at the sense of hands, hands in your arms that are able to be the watchman of your house, if you would. and the mighty men stoop, probably looking in the sense of your legs, and people, you know, are not able to walk is strongly upright. The grinding ones stand idle, probably looking at our teeth, that they're not able to grind. They're, and it says, because they are few. So this loss of teeth, which was would even be more an issue at in previous years without the onset of dentist and dentures and so forth. And those who look through windows grow dim. And so our eyes, and several of us have glasses on now, and you didn't have this opportunity to have glasses in the degree in the way that we have them now. And so you have those things. And the doors on the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low. It may be looking in the sense of in our ears, and one will arise at the sound of a bird, that often thinking that people aren't able to sleep through the night, and so you're up early. And all the daughters of song will sing softly, so that loss of hearing very likely in view here. Furthermore, men are afraid of high places. There becomes that point of unsteadiness. And a lot of, this becomes an issue with people. You don't want to give up those limitations. You don't want to acknowledge that maybe I shouldn't climb on top of the house or, climb this ladder. And you hear, there's a connection with people falling. And who was it, the football player that died, the old from Super Bowl like one or something, died around the Super Bowl time, that fell off a ladder. Yeah, that played for Green Bay. One that was notorious because he was drunk on the Super Bowl and was the best player on the field. And he was drunk because he didn't think he was going to play. So he showed up to the game drunk. But anyway, he fell off a ladder, and I believe, or off the house or something, a couple of months ago. I didn't say that. So there's an association with people dying that fall off ladders when they're old. Terrors on the road. There's that more of an insecurity of being out as you get older, because you could have that one now too. Of course, maybe the terror is on other people on the road because you're driving. But I think there's that sense of being out because of less mobile, less ability to take care of oneself, to be aware. So there's that. The almond tree blossoms, probably looking in the sense of, because the almond tree was a kind of a white blossom, so probably looking in the sense of grain hair, though my hair started to turn gray in high school. So the grasshopper drags himself along. Well, grasshoppers hop, and they move fast when they want to. But here's one with a damaged leg, evidently, and it's dragging itself. So in that sense of mobility being affected. It says, for a man goes to his eternal home while mourners go about the street. Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. Yeah. I was trying to notice if I even wrote anything down. I wrote anything down on it. Yeah, it's just that's NIV. But that's probably gives you an idea of what the word, or what it did, or something there. Then, Ryrie's note says sexually impotent, which is, and you said the NIV says desire no longer stirred, so it's possibly speaking not of broad desires, but maybe more sexual desires. Maybe what's in view there. Yeah, it's pretty bad. Uh,
And I...
So if you look at it that way, then you're relatively young, so you ought to enjoy life, because even if you lived 150, it's still going to happen at 150. Or you may have 50 years of this if you lived 150. And, yeah, I think that's... Then the last couple of verses, he's kind of the same thing. But here the focus is again on living responsible, before death comes. It says, "Remember him," verse 6 and 7, "remember him before the silver cord is broken and the golden bowl is crushed, the pitcher by the well is shattered, and the wheel at the cistern is crushed. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it." All of these are probably looking at aspects of life in terms of the cord, maybe in the sense of a support, for life, a golden board, bowl is crushed, or maybe in the sense of looking, once again, in the sense of death. The picture, maybe, life in the sense of being shattered, how fragile life is, the will of the well in the sense of productivity. But it's all just looking at those aspects of life before those things happen, or remembering those things will be there in that sense. But, dust will return to the earth, but there's this spirit who returns to God. There's this sense of, once again, of being accountable to God. And so he brings this back that, we need, to recognize this responsible sense of living. So there's, through this, where he starts off at the very beginning saying, to everyone, enjoy life, because life is brief. But then there's a major focus on youth, an encouragement to youth to enjoy life, pursue your desires, but do that responsibly, because you are accountable. And then even at the end here, coming back to that sense of accountability. I was thinking today in terms of, just things that you put off that you like, always thought I wanted to do and you put off. Even with our kids and stuff that, obviously they're not going to happen now. And, not that you can do everything, not that you should do everything, and not that you should just say, I'm going to do all the desires, everything I desire, because there's that sense of accountability and responsible and this. But sometimes we put off things or we don't pursue things because, maybe we're too serious about life from the wrong perspective. Not serious about life, truly from the idea of serving God, following God, but serious about life that we've decided this is the way life is supposed to be at this time. And it's real easy to get that way. '87, this guy joined our church, and he invited me to Rotary Club and proposed me as a member. And I was going to join Rotary, and we were supposed to go out. I was supposed to have this interview with the guy that was in Rotary that was in charge of those things. And he, that year, for a few years here, it was the guy that Howard Cruzy that was president of Bluebell Ice Cream at that time. And it just kind of prefaced it by saying, if you go back and look at my high school annuals or yearbooks or whatever, when people wrote in, there'd be a lot of comments about smiles and my smile and all that. But something happened when I got in the pastorate. And when I got out of seminary and I went in the pastorate, and so I'm going out riding with Hal out there, and Hal says, he said, "Well, we're going to go talk to Howard Cruz," and he said, "He may he's he may be the only person I know that's more serious than you. And I had such a hard time believing that was the image of me. Because when I was around the kids, you know, and home, it was all enjoying life and laughing and all that, but I was never that way around other people. And there's something happened where I decided, you know, this is all supposed to be real serious. You know, it's all supposed to be, you know, like this. And sorry, Vaz. I wasn't trying to give her any opportunity to nudge you there, and instead of you can nudge her back and say whatever. But anyway, it wasn't my personality. That wasn't my personality. But yet I tied it in with being a pastor for some reason. And I think those are the aspects we ought to look at. It's not, you know, just go have fun and not be responsible. But where do we miss the opportunity to enjoy life? Because we've decided, not that God told us, but we've decided this is the way life is supposed to be. You know, we've got a wrong theology. We've got a wrong impression. And I think that's, you know, one of the things that we could look at here is, you know, there is a sense that we should enjoy life, but not flippantly, not irresponsible. Well, any thoughts or insights, questions? Yeah. It's understandable. Yeah, good question. I don't know. 75. I think, you know, like with Proverbs, you know, it makes a focus on youth. And yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you know, when you're little, or I know for me, of course, a lot of people have better insights than I had, but I remember being a kid and a school teacher or friends of my mom's, you know, I mean, they were old ladies. When I got out of college, they were the same age. You know? Yeah, you know, I'm like, wait a minute. And then you start really, you know, and then when you start getting a little older, you go, you know, they're still alive. They were probably about my age when I thought they were old. And then you kind of go, oh, that's what kids think of me now. Yeah, kids have a problem with that. They're always with their parents. They're usually not bad with other parents, but their own parents is, they don't want their parents around or doing anything. Yeah. Anything else? Well, we'll wrap this up next time.